Wake up! Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
I said 27-23 Bears over Commanders.
Yes. I said 24-20 Commanders over Bears.
I believe I had the same score as Mully, but I had the Bears winning instead of the Commanders.
Brendan, let's get you on the board, correct?
27-23 Bears. So I got the exact same thing as you, Dave.
See, we're all on the same page.
All wrong together.
You have the right to rescind.
I reserve the right.
Yes, I know.
Comes down to one last play. Here comes the Hail Mary, but the game on the line. And the ball is caught! Caught! It's a miracle! It's Devin Brown! Oh my goodness! This town is going crazy! It's a madhouse in Landover, Maryland!
He did it!
Oh, this one will be paid back over and over again for decades. Hit by Stevenson. Noah Brown just standing back there all alone. Plucks it out of the air for the victory.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Happy Bears Monday.
Shut up!
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Wow. I mean, are you over it yet? Anybody? That was one of the all-timers. The Bears. I mean, I don't know how you lose like that. I don't know how that happens to a professional football team after they battle back from absolutely just horrible performance. They finally come back. I thought Olin put it well in the postgame. He said, "You got the special." From Caleb Williams. And instead of talking about that, we're talking about the special that is Jaden Daniels.
Morning, Mully. Yeah, it's not a happy Monday. Not in Chicago, at least. The Washington walk-off, they're calling it. Hail Maryland, perhaps. 52-yard pass from Jaden Daniels to Noah Brown. And the Bears come home with one of the most unacceptable, inexcusable, inexplicable losses that they ever could have endured or created or manufactured themselves. This was a coaching loss. This is a loss that included a lot of fluky things.
Yeah.
Certainly that was the highlight of the NFL season, if you're talking about dramatics. But it was a situation the Bears never should have been in. It was a situation they put themselves in. And it was one they'll regret for a very long time.
Well, it's also one they're going to regret when, well, first of all, look at the division, right? We know how difficult that pathway is, and the Bears now unequivocally dead last in that division. But it's if you think you have aspirations for, number one, a winning season, number two, a playoff berth, I think you're gonna look back on that play. It wasn't a game. It was a play. And the final 2 seconds, which took forever because the quarterback supposedly ran 40 yards, scrambled for 40 yards, according to ESPN.
He had 13 seconds to throw.
It's the longest time for a completion at about, what, since they started keeping statistics?
Since the next-gen stats
yes.
was invented or started being utilized. It was one of those
wow.
plays. You're right. It will last a lifetime in your memory. It lasted 12.79 seconds while he had the ball, and it was the first TD pass with the time to throw over 10 seconds in the next-gen stats era. That goes back 8 years. Also, if you want more history, the 52-yarder was the second longest game-winning touchdown by a rookie as time expired in the fourth quarter behind Tim Couch's in 1999. It was the first of this millennium. So Jaden Daniels gets the last laugh. The Commanders celebrate. CBS gets its game that lived up to the hype after all. After a disappointing, putrid look away
Bears, yeah.
first three quarters, four quarters. That was not something that at halftime you thought, why did they flex this game?
Well, the last few minutes told you because it was
exactly
it was a spectacle. It was so funny because I have so many friends that were texting me, and a lot of the feeling was the Bears deserve to lose this game. I can't believe the Bears are going to win this game. They deserve to lose it. And then they lose it, and you don't hear from a lot of people after that.
No.
Nobody really believed they were going to lose it.
Well, it's hard to believe that
and
they lost it.
Even if you say they deserve to lose it for various dumb plays they attempted to run and various players they attempted to engage down at the goal line, what was that?
There were breakdowns.
Yeah.
There were breakdowns at every level, coaches, players, and you don't have any excuse for it. You don't have any explanation for it. What we heard from Matt Eberflus post-game was unacceptably bad. You don't sit there understanding the moment, understand the assignment here. You don't. That was not just a one-yard call. That was not something you just dismiss with that answer. You've got to understand the way people are going to interpret this, the way that you, how bad and dumb you looked as a coaching staff. You lost more than a game on Sunday. You lost the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, yeah. No, you lost ground. No question
and,
about
and
it.
And you may not regain that.
Yeah,
that's a hard thing if you're a head coach,
yeah.
If you're a play caller, if you're in professional sports. You lose a game, fine. You can't lose a season, but you did lose the benefit of the doubt.
I apologize if this is blasphemous, but this I thought was hilarious. We have a texter who checks in. Hail Mary, full of disgrace. And I think that's pretty funny because, again, the reason you call it a Hail Mary is because it's a prayer. It's a prayer. It's not something you can do. And to have that prayer answered for Washington, you know, my favorite headline ever in The Onion is God answers child's prayer. No, says God.
Yeah.
That's what the Hail Mary is supposed to be.
That's what happens 99% of the time.
Hail Mary wins!
Hail Mary, hell yes!
Was that the Washington Commanders? We should play that whole thing because, like, you don't know what the result of the play is unless you hear that. They don't tell you a single detail. It's about
it's
five
just
people
emotion.
Screaming.
It's
just a bunch of people screaming.
Here we go.
Four of them at the goal line. They bring three. Daniels backing up. He's just going to have to let one fly. Goes to the right side. Steps away from the defenders. Gives himself some time. Now steps up. Fires. Heads towards the end zone. It is
what's he saying? What is he saying?
There's not a word of detail.
No.
Jaden Daniels extended the play over and over and over.
Walk-off touchdown.
Okay, there we go. Finally a description.
Finally.
Look.
But I mean, that
by the way,
was ridiculous.
If you could take a step back, and it's difficult to do that here in the midst of what we're dealing with in Chicago today. Friday night, probably had one of the more dramatic home runs you're going to see from Freddie Freeman at a World Series.
Yep.
And then Sunday, you had the highlight we just heard of the NFL season in terms of drama. Wow.
Chirp, chirp. You had
and in between, we had a 52-yard field goal by Ball State at the buzzer.
Chirp, chirp.
Walk-off win in Muncie. So, yes, it was quite a weekend for dramatics. Gotta love sports.
I mean, unbelievable. But I think it's so funny. Like, you know, you paint a picture with your call. That was just, I mean, I painted a picture. It was just like a Jackson Pollock kind of like a complete just expulsion of paint. There was nothing. You couldn't understand a word they were saying.
You could not.
But you understood what happened.
Yes. And it was probably to Commanders fans.
Oh.
Poetic.
It was musical.
It was musical. It was definitely something they didn't expect to hear and can't get enough of now. And Jaden Daniels wins the battle of the rookie quarterbacks. He was better. He played. I think that was
questionable
when we left here on Friday and throughout the weekend. I'm very surprised that he played. I thought that it was gamesmanship, especially when we saw how Dan Quinn described Friday, yeah, keeping him out of view of the media during that period,
right,
and then bringing him back. But it looked like he'll be sore today, but you have to give that young man credit for he's gutsy, he's athletic, and he is special too.
Oh, he's a good player.
Special quarterback.
Yeah, I don't think they win that game without him.
No.
But it was interesting because, if you feel bad for anyone, and this is a crazy thing to say given the fact that the defense could not defend a Hail Mary at the end of the game, but the Bears' defense, man, hats off. They played their rear ends off. You look at these field goal lengths. These field goals are here we go, 27 yards, 30 yards, 28 yards. Those field goals are less that they are fewer yards than extra points, David.
They bent, but they didn't break for most of the game. You're right.
Ridiculous.
That's a very good observation. It's fair to point that out. It does speak to how the defense comes and rises to the occasion when they need to in the red zone. But my goodness,
it feels
very difficult and awkward to compliment the defense.
Well,
I know what you're saying. It's fair.
But we don't know. Matt Bowen did a great job. I think we retweeted it. He tweeted out an old play he has, where everybody's supposed to go, where you're supposed to go on a Hail Mary. And there is a player called the Savior who is the guy who is the last line of defense.
Right.
One guy who is supposed to do that. Now, could it be Jaquan Brisker who's out from the game because he's got a concussion? Could it be Kyler Gordon, who is also out from the game? I don't know who it was supposed to be, but one player on that field,
yes,
had to do his job and did not. And I think it's insane. It's madness to me that you had only three guys rushing and you used a spy. T.J. Edwards was playing a spy. In other words, if the quarterback,
rush the quarterback,
were to take off,
make him throw,
you would tackle him.
Three guys isn't enough.
Is that?
It's easy to block. You've given him all day. Yet the most egregious strategic mistake came on the previous down. You had an opportunity there to make it more than a 52-yard throw.
Yes.
You had they had the ball, and they're sitting there, and they're at the 24-yard line. And they complete a 13-yard pass to McLaurin, and there was no defense in the vicinity or the area code, the DMV.
He gets out of bounds with two seconds left.
And so he makes it a more manageable throw.
Yeah,
was as bad as any of the decisions that were made yesterday because it allowed Jaden Daniels to think that he could throw it into the end zone. You're right, and Matt Bowen did a terrific job, Mully, but any defensive back that's ever backpedaled understands how to defend. Then the back and your deepest, and you have the Savior, whatever you want to call it, different schemes call it different things, but the Bears didn't have that. Maybe it was because Tyreek Stevenson was too busy entertaining the end zone crowd.
There is a video out there, I'm sure it's everywhere. It shows him. He is taunting the Washington crowd. He's standing inside the 5-yard line. I believe he's on one side of the field. He's pointing and he's yelling. And then he turns around. The play is already ongoing. He turns, and there are guys running down the field, and you see the quarterback starting to scramble. And then he runs over, and he was the guy that got up. And did he try to make a one-handed catch?
His hand tipped it into the air.
Was he trying to catch it with
one hand? No, I think he was just trying to knock it down.
Well, he tipped it right to Noah Brown.
Yes, he did it. Yes.
He did.
And you have to wonder, everything is fair game here. Had he been in different position, had he been there a split second sooner, had he done something except for try to taunt the crowd after having a bad day himself because he had a 15-yard penalty and his head was in the clouds all day long. This guy should be benched, a healthy scratch, whatever you want to do. But that can't be tolerated. That was embarrassing if you're the Chicago Bears. Tyreek Stevenson, late to the party. There were fans, if you watch that video, there were Bears fans who you heard from pointing out, hey, they snapped the ball. You might want to turn around and earn your money, DB. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, no, that was insane. And it was funny, not funny, but I was amused. Pat Manley, we were talking about it, and then he saw it, and he said that John Hoke was going to handle. Like, he basically said that Hoke would go off on this kid like you wouldn't believe.
Well, I hope so.
Tyrique Stevenson did get on social media. He went on Twitter and he posted this. To Chicago and teammates, my apologies for lack of awareness and focus. The game ain't over until zero hits the clock. Can't take anything for granted. Notes taken. Improvement will happen. Hashtag bear down.
Yeah, I'm not interested in apologies. I'm not impressed
What about the bear down?
No, not even that. I'm not impressed or moved by post-game social media appeals for mercy.
Forgiveness?
Forget it. You were a clown.
You don't deserve
our understanding now, anybody's understanding now. Act like a professional and go do your job. And then if you want to taunt and you want to celebrate and you want to do all that stuff, fine. In the course of the game, you can't tolerate that.
The only way it could have been worse is if he had like run into a tuba player or a trombonist as he was trying to tap the ball.
That might have been something else. Then that would have been history, a different kind of history.
Why is there a marching band on the field?
Yeah,
there were
breakdowns at every level. And I think when you come out of the game, yes, he's an easy scapegoat because of the video. Shane Waldron's an easy scapegoat because of the call. But it all falls under the auspices of the head coach. This was a coaching loss, and Matt Eberflus has some credibility problems now that he didn't have before the game started. I really believe this is one that leaves a mark.
Yeah. Well, this is the honest-to-God truth. That you come out of the bye week, right?
That's it.
And you're supposed to be taking time to figure out, hey, you know, it's going to be loud in there. We know we can't jump off sides. How quickly did Braxton Jones jump off sides? It was like the second three and out that they had in the game. Or maybe they got a first down. At any rate, my point is simply all of the things that you were worried about, that you wanted them to work on, things that are important to do during the bye week, I feel like the coaches – the players didn't come out of the bye week clean because the coaches didn't.
No, they didn't. That was like a team that was relearning how to play, how to win, how to function. They were flat. I don't think that they looked like a team that learned anything.
No.
The self-scouting was non-existent. You didn't learn anything about the Bears yesterday. You didn't know. And it looked like a team that was hurt by the schedule. The lull in the schedule hurt the Bears because they took too many days off. The rust was obvious.
And Patrick Manley made the point. I thought it was a great point. He said of the handoff to Doug Kramer,
okay,
that's a bye week call. That's a coach with too much time on his hands during the bye week. Let's listen.
Olin, that Kramer call makes me think about what coaches do during the bye week. To me, that was a bye week call. They had a lot of extra time on their hands and they're like, oh, let's put this one in. We can fool them with, you know, the refrigerator Perry, you know, fullback lineman run. And that to me is just when the coaches have too much time, in my opinion, don't get so cute there. Do what you're good at. Like you said, run behind Darnell Wright and do it that way. But I don't know. That's a bye week call to me. And that was a bad, bad, bad call. But I was hoping we were going to have fun with that after a win. And now we've really got to break that down more. Yeah.
Be that as it may, whether they put it in the bye week or over the summer or the day after they hired Shane Waldron, you don't pull it out in those circumstances. Not when you have a $23 million wide receiver in Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, your number one wide receiver, you're paying all that money to. Cole Kmet, what's he making? I don't know.
$50 million,
but you have DeAndre Swift, who's had a 50-plus yard touchdown run. What are you going to do? You're going to hand it to your backup offensive guard?
I got to tell you, it's like you can't score in that game. You're struggling the whole day. You get down to the goal line, and it's...
Oh, let's hand it to a backup lineman because he'll get that tough yard. It's time to unplug the mini fridge.
And then it didn't matter. It didn't matter because you came back and you took the lead for the first time in 59.5 minutes.
That's where the special showed up. That's where Caleb Williams,
the special.
At one point in time in that fourth quarter, after that drive, Roschon Johnson scores a touchdown. They got the ball back. Caleb Williams, 6-8 in the fourth quarter, after really stinking it up for the first three.
Yeah.
That's when you thought, okay, Caleb Williams refused to let them lose, and you felt like that was going to be the takeaway. He went home. He struggled. whatever the reason was, there were a lot of them, but he got to the fourth quarter and he was unfazed and he focused and he would not let his team lose.
It was going to be like one of the greatest wins in Bears history. We'd be in here right now talking about,
despite
three offensive linemen going out,
despite all of the bad calls,
that what Ryan Poehl said, he's going to do the special. He did the special.
He did.
And then what happened? Then it turns out that Jaden Daniels is really special.
It showed you that Jaden Daniels is really special, but it also showed you that Caleb Williams is ahead of the curve with the other people in this organization. When you look at the key matchups we talked about going into the game and everything about the what-if game that we played all week long, head coach, play caller, quarterback. Well, you know what? Commanders got a better day from their head coach. They got a much better day from their play caller. Quarterback, all right, Jaden Daniels was better, but you don't feel bad about Caleb Williams after yesterday. But the Commanders did what the Bears should have done, and that was walk away with the victory they earned. The Bears, we were that close to having a very different conversation this morning.
Yes.
As it is, I think we talk all morning long, all season long now about what are the Bears doing and how much trust do you have in a regime that can't get out of its own way? This was a bad one for the Bears.
No, that's definitely going to leave a mark. There's no way around it. And, you know, it was interesting because Olin said that Brett Bielema talked to his team after the Oregon game. And he said to them, we can't let Oregon beat us twice. And he said the same thing needs to be said to the Bears. Because now you're going into Arizona. Now you're a 1.5-point dog. You're no longer favorited on the road. Because guess what? You're 3-17 on the road under this head coach. And they have yet to learn how to win on the road. Whether anyone wants to say that's ridiculous, 2 years ago doesn't matter, last year doesn't matter, I don't care what it is. You've lost three road games that you've played this year in hostile environments. And that's got to be something you think about.
So you want to avoid having one loss lead to two.
And that's
and I understand that is the...
That's the problem.
That's the first reaction that you have coming out of that game because if you're the Bears, you worry about the hangover effect. You worry about the loss of credibility, not only outside the locker room, but within it.
I agree.
Because you have a lot of guys shaking their heads this week and this season. What were they doing on third and goal from the one? Then what are they doing on that third down before the Hail Mary play, Hail Maryland play?
What the hell was that? That might have been the worst play called.
What?
And they called a ton of bad ones. They had the quarterback do a draw run. Are you kidding me? First of all, you could have gotten the guy killed. Secondly, you end up in fourth and three.
Yeah, fourth and three, and it was not one that made any sense. So you've got some... And then also, let's face it, you got Tyrique Stevenson with some explaining to do. Maybe his teammates aren't going to be bothered by that, but I do wonder if he has some explaining to do to them. He let them down. He had his back to the line of scrimmage.
It was unbelievable.
When the ball was snapped on the most important play of the day. Think about that.
It was unbelievable.
Everything that could have gone wrong went wrong on that final play for the
Bears. Did I mention that he did give you a bear down?
I don't care about his apology.
It was a hashtag bear down.
He didn't talk after the game. Then he went onto the team plane and he tweeted out whatever he tweeted out. Save it. Save it. Go to TikTok. Go to wherever you want to find a receptive audience. He's not going to find one here.
All right. It is it's a Bears Monday. You're listening to a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. We've got the pick six next. We're going to tear apart all the stories of the day. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
How do you explain the Bears somehow winning before ultimately losing to the Commanders 18-15? They are now 3-17 on the road in the Eberflus era ahead of next week's game in Arizona to the Cardinals, and they are already set as a 1.5-point underdog. What was the absolute worst thing about yesterday's loss?
Yeah, I mean, my God, there were some bad things about that loss. But if I had to pick the one thing, I think that Olin Kreutz, who we'll talk to at 7 o'clock, got it right. I think Caleb Williams showed you the special. Caleb Williams came back from a terrible performance and got it done in the fourth quarter and brought them back to two touchdowns, including one after the fumble at the goal line with the ridiculous handoff, the call to hand off to Doug Kramer. Poor Doug Kramer, he must feel awful about it. Don't worry, Doug, it's not your fault. At any rate, I think that Caleb, I want to get back to that.
I'm sorry. You need to be crisper.
We got to be crisper.
Crisp.
I thought that the fact that Williams came back and won that game, and then we're sitting here right now talking about Jaden Daniels winning that game, that stinks. Mm-hmm. And that is the worst thing that happened in that game.
The worst thing that happened in that game is that Tyrique Stevenson got caught with his back to the ball as it's being snapped on the final play of the game that ends up being a 70-yard heave for a Hail Mary conversion. That was by far a long list of bad things, but that was by far, to me, the worst.
It's a long list, isn't it? It's a long list, too long. I think to sum up, the worst thing about yesterday was the realization that this still, it remains a football team, dare I say, a football regime, an organization that does not know how to win. Does not know how to win. If you know how to win, you know how to close. If you know how to win, you know better than to hand the ball to a backup offensive lineman when you don't have the lead, when you need to be sure about everything that you do, and you hand the ball to a backup guard. Unplug the mini fridge. That's over. Sorry, Doug Kramer. It's not your fault.
I would use him as a blocker because they cut Kerry Blackmon.
Maybe. You got tight ends for that. It seems gimmicky to me. You can't afford, again, goes back to the whole overarching thing. The Bears proved yet again they have no clue how to win. That's a problem. That's a credibility issue. We're in year three. Year three. This isn't a novice head coach any longer. You don't know how to win. Learn it.
Maybe that's something Eberflus can clear up a little bit later on today, but that's a good question.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. Biggs time around 6:40 this morning. Where are you with the cornerback Tyrique Stevenson this morning? What was his worst moment in the game? Was it when he picked up a 15-yard personal foul for poking an offensive lineman in front of another official, or was it when he was joined at the fans when the final play started before running to cover the Hail Mary and batting it to Noah Brown for the game-winning catch?
I love this question because it's a long one, because that's how much time you need to describe how bad of a day it was for Tyrique Stevenson. Hashtag bear down. Save the apology. I'm not interested. Nobody should be. And I hope Matt Eberflus doesn't fall for it. He may apologize to the team. He may have tears falling, rolling down his cheeks. I don't care. He's got to sit. You have to be in a healthy scratch. You got to send a message. If you are not holding Tyrique Stevenson accountable for that nonsense, back to the line of scrimmage with the game on the line, once again, you haven't won anything yet. That game was still in question. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know how to win. It's time to learn. It's time to make an example out of somebody. I don't care who starts behind him and what the depth situation is and who's injured and who isn't. You have a problem with a young player who's very good, but he's very undisciplined, and you need to instill some within him. Sit him.
Notes taken, David. Improvement will happen. Now, when you say sit him, are we talking like
healthy scratch?
Like from the whole game?
That's a healthy scratch.
Okay, so would you leave him hit? Okay, I want to clarify. I just want him a little more. Would you leave him at home? He does not go to Arizona.
I might take him and then healthy scratch. Make him watch. Make him watch his backup struggle against Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr. and realize what that means to him.
Hashtag bear down.
I just don't. I mean, usually I would be the one with that strong of an opinion, but I mean, the problem is depth.
We're not talking about Darrell Revis here. I mean,
well, he's their starting corner.
Well, that's a whole other topic I would like to get into. No, Darrell Revis
coming off a terrible game.
I mean, I'm not arguing that at all, but I remember feeling like, God, I hope he's healthy enough to play. And now here we are.
Could we add the 61-yard bomb that he got burnt on, the longest
Thank
play,
you.
Right?
Thank
and
you.
Add that yeah, into that, the mix
that,
as well.
That was another
right?
one. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah. He didn't like Terry McLaurin, did he? They got into they were jawing before he poked up.
I'll take Terry McLaurin in that one. He's proven something.
I'm not arguing that. I listen, Tyreek Stevenson had a nightmare. He had, his worst moment has to be the last play of the game because it cost the Bears the game. And it just looked like a guy who was hot-dogging it and having a laugh and didn't realize that the game wasn't over. So that has to be the worst one. But I thought poking a guy in front of an official was an incredibly selfish act. Everybody has moments where they lose their head a little bit, but that was just really disgraceful. And I think that that's the word that I'll stick with when I think of his performance in that game. It's one thing to have a poor game. It's another thing to kind of disgrace yourself, and I felt he did.
I don't know. That's a tricky question.
That's the voice of DJ Moore, 8 o'clock. He'll be with Mully and Haw. Do you agree with Patrick Manley, who called the handoff to Doug Kramer on the goal line?
That's a bye week call to me.
From Shane Waldron, can you think of some other Waldron moments you found particularly upsetting?
There were a lot of Waldron moments that I did not like. I think that the play on third down before the eventual touchdown, before the pass interference call, I didn't understand that at all. You are at third and five, and you've got to here's time for your best call of the game, because you got to convert, or you're going to have to get close enough to convert on fourth down. And what did you do? You ran
quarterback draw.
It was
designed run
to Caleb
What's
Williams,
that?
Who got lit up and got crunched
2 yards.
He's taken too many hits. You gain 2 yards, and then on fourth and three, there's a pass interference call that bails you out. I'm just saying, as a call, that was a bad idea, man. That was a dumb, dumb call, and it was as bad as any in the game. I did not under... Well, the Kramer call was probably the worst call in the game. Who am I kidding?
Of the season.
But you know, that was another... I mean, the word's disgraceful. How do you do that? How do you get cutesy cute? When you're in, like, the biggest moment of the game, when you've never led in the game, and you got the ball on the goal line, what are you doing? What the hell are you doing? Tell the crazy scientist that he's needed elsewhere. Get out of the lab, pal.
How about the fourth and one in the second quarter to DJ Moore behind the line of scrimmage? I'm so sick of that. And, like, is DJ Moore a wide receiver? Is he a running back now?
Yeah.
Two handoffs to DJ Moore?
I think that was Caleb switching out of a play. I think he had an option, and I think they had another play on, and the corner fooled him. The corner was back, and then the corner came forward.
No, I think that'll be a great thing to ask DJ at 8 o'clock.
Yeah. You like his chances there?
No.
I think you do.
No. I like to put.
He's got to break
that would be. That would have been a good time for the mini fridge to be the lead blocker and give the ball. Give the ball to.
I'm really down in the mini.
Yeah,
fridge.
I know. You said unplug it, David. Yes.
What's wrong with that?
I think he wanted to defrost it. In fairness to David,
who's being fair to me? Dustin's not. All right. So, other Waldron moments particularly upsetting. How about all of them? I'm fed up with this guy. Look, I've been trying to be patient. We're 7 games in. We have 2 games where you have losses by the Bears that were largely because of calls. I just don't – my football sensibilities are so offended by Shane Waldron right now. Against the Colts, it was a speed option to the short side of the field, and it didn't make any sense. What was that? And then all this bye week time, Pat's probably right. They probably developed this on the bye week, said, we're going to, you know what we're going to do when the game on the line? We need a touchdown. We're going to hand the ball to our backup offensive lineman because he's got such great finesse and we'll get such great buzz out of that. No, that was the dumbest play of the game. That was the dumbest play of the season. And that was particularly upsetting to respond directly to the question, but there were others.
Hashtag all of them.
All of them.
AOT.
Hashtag defrost. It's time to unplug the mini fridge.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
All right, we're gonna take a timeout from the Bears for a second. Everybody can breathe.
Okay.
The Bulls actually got a win. I remember I said no win until November. How do you explain the Bulls, who beat the Bucks on Friday night by protecting the ball and hitting threes, but were bad enough one night later at home against the Thunder to go get booed in the second quarter by the home fans? Is this life in the NBA middle? Anyone stand out in a good or a bad way?
Well, yeah, I think Hobby White was on fire Friday night. 35 points, that's the way the Bulls want to play. That's the way they need to play. That pace was something that, frankly, wore down the Bucks and on their home floor. That was surprising to see. Had no expectation of that. And then you feel like a fool because you believe that that's repeatable. Maybe not to that degree, but a night later, you thought at home, you get Lonzo Ball back, you got the emotion of Caruso in the building. You're at home as the opener, and then, like, man, who left? I know OKC's really good, but you didn't really have an answer for a lot of different things that they did. Alex Caruso did what he always does, didn't score a lot, but boy, is he a factor on a very good team. So I think this is life in the NBA middle. You're going to feel great one night because, oh, they're getting it. Billy Donovan is getting through. They might be better than we think. Next night, nah, not really.
Kobe White at the home opener, 0-9 from threes. 0-9.
Yeah.
And the great Max LaVine, 7 turnovers.
That it?
That's a wrap.
Okay. Well, I thought Kobe really came to play against the Bucks, and I thought that the Bulls were moving the ball and the pace was phenomenal, and they had a lot of, it was, Stacy said it on the broadcast a couple of times, that they had a couple of jump shots where it was almost as if the Bucks had read a scouting report that says, don't worry, they can't shoot, you can leave them open from the, and the Bulls were hitting tons of shots. They hit 21 threes. They never hit 21 threes a year ago. I think 19 was their season high in 2023. So they've already got a season high of 21, which is pretty good. Yeah, I think they knocked down shots, and they made their shots, and they were wide open jumpers, by the way. I thought that that KC must have gotten to Patrick Williams, because Patrick Williams, I know Giannis scored a ton of points, but Patrick Williams played him well, and he hit two huge buckets down the stretch when it really mattered. I thought the Bulls played really well with their second unit. I mean, it was one of those games where you were kind of watching it like, oh my God, they're going to win this game. How are they going to go into Milwaukee and beat that team? Remember all those dark years where that never happened? They played them pretty well in the preseason, and they came out and beat them, and they flat out beat them. It wasn't a fluke. OKC is pretty outstanding. I was very impressed that they've managed to win a game this weekend. So kudos to the Bulls.
I'll get somebody else to ask these questions, man.
With Shohei Ohtani clear to play after injuring his shoulder in game two, how much will the injury affect Ohtani, and how much do you think it could limit Ohtani? Would you let him play through injury or rest him to protect exposure to something worse?
Well, I play him. I mean, I would definitely play him. They had him in the batting cage. He just was hitting off of a tee, but they wanted him to get used to getting his swing going. And apparently this injury comes down to a matter of pain tolerance. That's one of the things that Dave Roberts said. Dave Roberts said, basically, if he comes in and says he's ready to go, then he's going to go. And I mean, you need Ohtani, you need his clutch play, you need his ability at the plate. I think he's a catalyst player for your team. I think you won two games, and the last thing you want to do is make it a series now. I would do everything humanly possible to win this series as fast as humanly possible, and I would cross my fingers and hope Ohtani can go, and I'd definitely keep him in the lineup.
Oh, I'd play him, but he's not allowed to steal a base. I mean, was there any questioning about why he was stealing a base when he stole the base?
It was a little strange.
A little strange. But because they won
awkward
the game,
slide.
Because they won the game, yeah. That didn't come up. Why was he stealing, and whose decision was
he's
it for him to steal?
He's got the green light, doesn't he?
Yes.
He's got to have the green light.
He's got to.
Dustin, you're not putting up the caution sign for the MVP. If he wants to steal, he can steal. But I think it
then learn how to slide.
I think he knows how to slide. I think this is pretty freakish, right?
He's not pitching.
He's definitely not pitching.
No, he won't be pitching. How about the reaction to when Ohtani was just laying there? It's almost like the baseball world just stopped breathing for a moment. Like, oh, everybody held their breath. Unless you're a Yankees fan, perhaps. And you're like, okay, I hope he's hurt. But Ohtani injured in the World Series? I hope he does come back. I hope he's fine. I hope he can tough it out if he needs to tough it out. Whatever he needs to do to put himself in the mindset of playing through this kind of pain, I think we need to see that happen. Already, the first two games, did you see the TV ratings? You see it, 13.8 million viewers.
Told you.
It is definitely something that is enjoyable. I hope it goes seven. I hope it goes seven to the 10th inning and they win with a walk-off, whatever. Freddie Freeman does it again if you're a Dodgers fan, or maybe it'll be Aaron Judge or Juan Soto. This is great drama. Friday night, Saturday night. I know the Dodgers are off to a 2-0 start, but who knows? With the Yankees, that could be easily go the other way the next two games. Ohtani, I hope he's healthy. This is a fun World Series.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Well, speaking of Freddie Freeman, where does Freddie Freeman's walk-off Grand Slam rank on your mental list of most dramatic October moments? Can one game dictate the course of an entire series?
I don't think so. I hope not, because I picked the Yankees, but it certainly lived up to the billing, and you're sitting there watching, and it could not happen to a nicer guy. You know what's uncanny? Totally uncanny that this compared so quickly and so obviously to Dodgers faithful, to Kirk Gibson in 1988, 36 years ago, Joe Davis nailed the call. You're not going to hear a better call on a World Series big moment than you heard Joe Davis, who reflected the symmetry between Freddie Freeman's home run and Kirk Gibson's. And it happened, folks, at the same exact time, 8:37 Pacific time, PM, which is kind of strange and eerie and coincidental. But yeah, I mean, there are other moments. Joe Carter, obviously the October home run comes to mind. Some of the ones that the Cubs hit, Montero, that was a big one in October. But it doesn't get much better than a walk-off Grand Slam in the World Series. Freddie Freeman living a dream.
Freddie Freeman, a Hall of Famer, by the way. We had that conversation the other day, so I think we can put that list to five now. With even no matter what happens, even if the Yankees come back to win this series, Freddie Freeman is a Hall of Famer. It was really great. But just with all due apologies, the call was great. Ironic that it happened at the same time. Left-handed hitters, ball basically went to the same exact part. But Freddie Freeman that was his fifth at bat. Okay, Kirk Gibson hadn't hit. That's the big difference. Okay, it was a pinch hit.
Details.
Well, I think it's important.
Details.
I do think that's important to the dramatic nature of that situation. But it was really cool. I'm glad I saw it. I watched every single pitch Saturday night. I mean, other than maybe flipping over to see really quick what was going on in LSU and Texas A&M, I saw every pitch of that game and enjoyed it thoroughly.
Listen, that was a great game, and that was a great finish, and all respect to Freddie Freeman. But if you need to also thank Aaron Boone, what was he doing?
Yes,
what was
definitely.
He thinking? He brings in Cortez.
Nestor Cortez
to pitch against the guy. And it's so funny because his comment was, I felt convicted. That he was not convinced. He felt convicted. Well, you're going to be convicted in the court of public opinion.
He already has been guilty.
I mean, holy cow.
Guilty of stupidity.
So you know, I don't know. I don't remember the Kirk Gibson, Homer well enough, but I'd say Freddie should send a Christmas card to Aaron Boone.
That was a bad decision. And Cortez just wasn't up for the challenge.
All right, we got the extra point next. We're going to get to it, and then we're going to get to our guy, Big Z, right away. It's Mully, it's Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 the score.
What's your biggest takeaway from Washington's 52-yard game-winning Hail Mary as time expired? Was it the lack of the deep, quote, savior to defend wide receiver Noah Brown, who was alone behind the play? Was it the use of a three-man rush with linebacker T.J. Edwards as a, quote, spy in case Daniels opted to run? Was it Daniels holding the ball for 12.79 seconds before throwing the ball down the field? It covered 40.7 yards while scrambling. Should the officials have made a holding call, maybe?
No, I don't think you want a holding call in that situation to determine the game. I don't know that it was that egregious or something that stood out. I get why that question would be asked, though, because there might have been some holding going on. But I don't think that it was that it would determine the outcome of that play. You had a couple things in play here. Number one, Tyreek Stevenson began the play with his back to the line of scrimmage taunting fans. Number two, you had the most convenient pass rush is a misnomer. There was nothing that those people who were trying to sack the quarterback did that was made it necessary to call it a rush. They couldn't get to him. So you should have sent another guy. Why you had a spy? If he wanted to run, he wasn't going to run for a touchdown. Oh. Everyone would catch him. And the biggest thing was, though, yeah, you didn't have the guy behind the deepest. That's what every safety learns when they start playing peewee football. But for me, one of the most egregious things was what happened the play before the play that happened. You allowed Terry McLaurin to run a down and out for 13 yards when you knew that they had no way to stop the clock, and there was no defense in the vicinity, in the entire DMV, it seemed. They could run down, catch a pass, and step out of bounds to set up the 52-yard Hail Mary. If you are 13 yards further away from the end zone, it's less likely that you can complete the Hail Mary in the end zone. There was no defense. There was no resistance. They gave the Commanders all that they wanted. That, to me, was as bad as anything else that happened, and that was coaching.
It's a great point, David. You don't get those 13 yards. You don't have enough arm. How about Tony Romo even calling for them to go to Marcus Mariota for that play? I mean, Tony Romo, boy, he had some thoughts. He was going to go for it on fourth down, right?
Yeah.
When they punt. I mean,
thank you.
Oh, and then he's like, oh, wait, I'm not playing Madden. This is an actual real football. I mean, ooh, boy, not real good
in the
booth.
You're not in your basement. You're talking
not
to CBS.
Not real good in the booth. But, listen, again, this the worst part of all of this, again, and when you watch that all 22 view, I mean, Stevenson, it's unexcusable. I just don't know if I can go as far as David based on the injuries, but boy, I could get behind it. I think I could. You could talk me into it, leaving, but I wouldn't fly him. He'd also stay at home. He wouldn't go down the plane.
Fine.
No road trip.
Hashtag beard. I got to tell you, it's like all these things needed to happen for that play to work. There were a lot of blunders on this play. The Stevenson thing's a disaster. The reason it's not included in this question is because there was an earlier question just about him that was pulled out of it. So I do think, though, that somebody blew their assignment as far as Noah Brown was concerned. You have to have someone who knows what their job is and knows to be back there. And I'd like an explanation as to what went wrong on that. Because it took forever to unfold. The guy, as we're talking about, when you don't rush him, he's got 12.79 seconds to run around before he just lines up and heaves the thing. I don't believe that the pass rush, the three-man rush, was in a hurry. They weren't rushing.
They weren't rushing
anything. And it was a pity that Montez Sweat couldn't be on the field.
That was
he was
tough.
Obviously hurt.
Yeah.
And he's the guy with the speed and with the, you know, great athleticism. And you saw it a couple times where he's kind of kryptonite to Jaden Daniels, I thought.
Yes.
The fact that Daniels had a rib also prevented him from running at various points in the game where I really believe had he been healthy, he would have chewed up that defense. I mean, he's a dangerous, fast player. But to give him 12.79 seconds so he can run around for 40 yards, what is that? That's insane. And I will, to my death day, try to figure out what the hell they were thinking with T.J. Edwards as a spy. Why would you need a spy? If he does cross the line of scrimmage,
he's not going to run that far.
But the whole team can come up and hit him.
They can converge. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got to be kidding me. But I think that tons of problems. That now we don't know with the injuries if somebody was off the field that needed to be there. But it just seemed
Montez Sweat was the only guy that was injured that we know of that was off the field that should have been on it.
Jaquan Brisker wasn't on the field. Yeah. Kyler Gordon. I'm just saying. But I don't know what the rules are. I mean, they've got assignments for everybody on a Hail Mary and someone blew an assignment. But the fact that that is how you lost the game, I think it needed all these things to happen. And it's just – it's unforgivable. It is absolutely unforgivable for the Bears to have lost in that fashion. We got – Biggs time next. It is Mully and Haw on the score.
The brand Biggs. Biggs time.
Biggs.
With Mully and Haw. Biggs time.
The Biggs Report.
With Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The score, Brad Biggs. Is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend. And he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Big Zay!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you are at the airport for an early morning flight home, and Brad, I don't know what it must feel like. That was one of the weirdest, worst, horrible endings I think I've ever seen to a Bears game, and I've seen some bad, buddy.
Oh, boy. Yeah. They didn't deserve to win the game in the first place the way they played for the first three quarters, for sure, and then all of a sudden, we're in position to win the football game. And the Hail Mary at the end was a shame because defensively, I thought they played really well. Is there stuff that needed to be tightened up? Sure. But when you make the Commanders kick field goals on three trips inside your 10-yard line, you defend the end zone for the first 59 minutes and whatever it was, 47 seconds, your defense is catching a position to win the game when you've only allowed 12 points, and it's right there for them. They could have a jubilant locker room afterward, talk about areas that need to be improved, and instead they were stunned. I think that's probably the best word to describe it.
With words or actions, Brad, how do you expect Matt Eberflus to respond to the fact that Tyreek Stevenson began the last play, the Hail Mary play, with his back to the line of scrimmage, taunting the Commanders crowd?
Yeah, that was really something, and had a perfect angle for it. Although I was in the opposite end zone, you could the sight line, it's low there, and so you've got a pretty good view. And pre-snap, I'm looking at it, and he's not even looking at the field. And I'm saying, well, what in the world is he doing? The game's not over. And then the ball snapped, and he didn't get turned around, guys, until that trio of targets on that side were at about the Bears' 25-yard line. So those guys had gone basically – they covered half the ground needed to get from the line of scrimmage to the goal line, and Jaden Daniels ended up running around so much that he was able to recover in time, but I don't know that he was in the right position. And in terms of responses from Matt Eberflus, I think the most important words he'll have to say will be in front of the entire team, right? What he says publicly, I'm curious. And then, you know, will actions follow? Because how do you have a hits philosophy and it be anything more than a clever little coaching acronym if you don't take action on something
right.
like that,
I'm
right? Like, you know, Terrell Smith, you're next man up for a week or something, because I just, it unprofessional, inexcusable, you can attach just about any adjective you want to it.
Yeah, when I saw it, I actually thought of Bobby Valentine describing Starlin Castro during a Cubs game. You remember that he turned his back to the play. I don't know that we've ever really seen that happen in football. I mean, the play is ongoing, and he's pointing at someone, and then all of a sudden he runs over and
he's posing and yes. he's waving. Yeah, I mean it was the yeah. whole like. I mean it was the whole thing like.
And then dude. He ends up with the guy that hits the ball, and the ball goes up in the air, and he's got the assist on that play. What was that?
Hockey assist.
Yeah, there was no. There was the Bears didn't have a guy in the end zone by the ball by
who,
the time the ball came down.
Who was that supposed to be? Was it supposed to be Brisker or Tyler Gordon or something?
They wouldn't
say. Yeah,
they wouldn't say. Stevenson attacked the ball in the air from the side.
Yeah,
I just can't imagine that's the way it was drawn up. We'll see what Matt Eberflus says, but. The Commanders had their tall guy in the middle there, Zach Ertz, the 6'5" tight end. He's the guy that's supposed to be the jump ball guy for them. And they were at the outer range for Jaden Daniels with a rib injury, right? Their own 48-yard line. He drops back, uncorks that from about his own 35, 36-yard line. The ball didn't quite make it to the end zone in the air. Gets there via the tip, but that free 13-yard play – they had the snap before that took only 4 seconds, put them in position. They could not have run a Hail Mary from the previous yard line.
Exactly. This segment with Brad Biggs, sponsored by Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868. Brad, what are the realistic chances that Matt Eberflus takes away play calling duties from Shane Waldron after that disastrous day and asks Thomas Brown to step in?
Oh, boy. I think it's a little early for that. I do. That one would probably catch me off guard. Thomas Brown called some plays last year in Carolina, and they thought it was going to be a solution there. And as you're well aware, no buttons that they pushed for the Panthers a year ago were any good. I'm not saying he wouldn't do better this time around, but that seems like a move that they would not be ready to make. At this point, they had won 3 consecutive games. Yeah, they came out and played very poorly. They couldn't convert on third down. And the thing that I looked at all week, really for 2 weeks, guys, because they're coming off the bye, I looked at this. I said, this is a really average defense. I mean, it's an average defense that Dan Quinn is squeezing the absolute most out of. But they've got Deron Payne up front. They've got Bobby Wagner, who's in year 13. He's 34 years old at linebacker. They got a bunch of dudes in the secondary I think they'd love to replace sooner rather than later, and the Bears couldn't get anything cooking.
This segment with Brad Biggs is sponsored by Estwing, professional tools made in the USA for 100 years, estwing.com. Brad, who was more unprepared coming out of the bye, the players or the coaches?
I think they're both in it together. I really do. I mean, the coaches, the offensive coaches, I don't think they had a plan that I know they didn't have a plan that worked real well there. They finally got running the ball a little bit with DeAndre Swift there. In the players, the execution was not to a level that is acceptable. Again, defensively, they played really well.
Right.
If you take out the Hail Mary at the end, I thought they played. And the yardage that they ended up giving up wasn't indicative of how that game went. Washington got 52 on the Hail Mary, and they got another huge chunk on the final play of the first half, which was never a scoring threat. It was a 29-yard play for Austin Eckler. So the yardage is a little bit skewed. Torrey Taylor kept dropping the ball inside the 10-yard line, so they had field position advantage. Just disappointing all the way around. I can't remember the last time they lost on a walk-off touchdown in regulation. I do know the last time they lost on a Hail Mary, 2011, Kansas City Chiefs come in.
Yep.
Tyler Palko with a 38-yard toss to Dexter McCluster on the final play of the first half. You say, well, how'd they lose on that? They lost the game 10-3, and that was the only touchdown of the game.
Brad, I called it a coaching loss, but Ryan Poles also bears responsibility for having his lack of depth at offensive tackle exposed. Braxton Jones goes down. Karan Amagaji not ready for that challenge. What do they do on the offensive line now?
Well, Nate Davis might be sticking around longer than people thought. I figured Nate Davis was probably headed toward being released here in the near future, but they lost three guys yesterday. Braxton Jones, Tevin Jenkins went out twice with a knee injury. And then Bill Murray had a pec injury, and that's concerning because anytime you hear pec injury, those usually aren't good. Those often signal season ending. So they've got some depth issues there. Larry Borum returned to practice this past week, so he'll get another week of practice this week. Could be elevated in time for the Arizona game. He's played left tackle in the past. Matt Pryor, who started a right guard, looked like he'd be the swing tackle there through a lot of training camp, so he'd be an option. You'd have to replace him at right guard. So they've got some moving parts there. I don't know that I'd criticize Poles for the lack of depth at offensive tackle. They have options. They have gone through some injuries. It's not like most teams have a road grader just sitting behind the starting left tackle that's ready to step in at a moment's notice. And it's unfortunate for them because Braxton Jones may have been playing the best football of any lineman that they have, guys.
Is Sweat okay, Brad? We'll let you go, but is Sweat okay?
Yeah, he was. I saw Sweat leaving the locker room, guys, and had a little limp going on with the shin injury there. So that's one to keep an eye on this week for sure, because he makes a difference when he's out there.
Great stuff. Thank you, buddy. Have a great week.
Safe travels, Brad. Thanks.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Have a great flight.
Yes, he's on his way back. That's why we had to talk to him earlier than usual. But good stuff.
You're listening to a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. Yeah, it's always great to talk to Big Z, and it's always great to talk to Olin Krutz.
He's next.
We're going to bring in Olin next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.